Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I am your host, Jimmy Trana. Thanks for listening to this episode. We have one guest on, Brian Curtis of The Ringer. He covers media for the website and was in Miami, did a great feature story on Radio Row that I wanted to talk to him about. So he's on the show today. We talked about the Super Bowl. He was there, got some insight of what things are like inside the building for a Super Bowl. We talked about the ratings for Fox, got into the halftime show, a couple of other media things, Tony Romo, and what's going to happen in Tony's future there. ESPN and CBS expected to battle for his services, and a couple other media topics. And then we talked about Brian Curtis's article for The Ringer about Radio Row, which was amusing. So it was a good interview with Brian. If you missed the show last week, Kevin Harlan, who called Super Bowl 54 for Westwood One Radio, was on. 2 weeks ago, Brent Musburger, Chris Long were on the podcast. And 3 weeks ago, Kurt Menefee from Fox was on the SI Media podcast. If you missed any of those interviews, check them out. Subscribe to the podcast so you can get it delivered to your listening device. And if you rate and review, that helps tremendously as well. All right, let's get to this edition of the SI Media podcast with Brian Curtis of The Ringer right now. All right, joining me now from The Ringer, he's an editor at large over there, and he does the Press Box podcast for The Ringer and covers media and was just down in Miami for the Super Bowl and wrote a great column about Radio Row down there. Brian Curtis. Brian, how's it going?
Doing great. Doing great. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. And I want to talk to you about that article you wrote about Radio Row, which there's a lot of good nuggets there. But since you're just getting back from Miami, you were at the game. I'm curious. I did a little review of the Fox broadcast on Monday for SI.com. My takeaway from that game, watching it on TV, if you're a football fan, a diehard football fan who's week in, week out for 17 weeks, that is almost an impossible game to watch. It's not a game. It's a spectacle. The amount of commercials in that game was off the charts. I felt like that you could not get any flow. Fox was not able to get to replays. They were not able to analyze things. In the stadium where you were, was the starting and stopping for commercial breaks as annoying as I found it for TV? When you're there, what's that experience like?
Not as much, because I'm sitting next to Kevin Clough, football writer, who's, you know, making fun of me and entertaining me the whole time. So it was a little better. You know, I was in the company of sports writers, but no, I totally get what you mean. I did think the Super Bowl, I didn't see the final time. It did feel like it went fast for me.
Yes.
For, again, by Super Bowl standards, it felt like it moved right along. So, you know, I guess I didn't feel that, you know, kind of sense of, oh my gosh, this is taking forever, because it did seem to kind of speed along.
No, it did. Yeah. I think I might have seen yesterday it was 6 minutes less on average than the typical Super Bowl. The game itself was a quickly played game. But when you were watching it on television, it seemed like, you know, they put in a commercial wherever they could, and I felt like it hurt Buck and Aikman's flow a little bit. Just as an example, I'll give you the when Patrick Mahomes was running towards the end zone on one play, and he took a huge hit from a Niner defender, and the ball went flying backwards out of bounds. We didn't know first down or what happened, and Fox went right to commercial. There was no, and then you come back, and the ball's, and they're telling you, okay, they need a yard to go. So it was a lot of stuff like that.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, to me, that Fox crew sometimes gets underrated.
Yeah.
I know, I think you and I feel the exact same way about Joe Buck, but just also on the production level.
Right.
I feel we had this kind of moment of American life where all anybody could talk about was Sunday Night Football, and rightfully so, it's a great telecast. And then now we've gone to Romomania. But that Richie Zients, Rich Russo crew is really good.
Yeah.
And again, without, you know, giving 9 billion commercials to jam in there, they put on a really good looking, really good football telecast.
I couldn't agree more. And, you know, during the regular season, you know, I've talked about this on this podcast, you know this. The money game now is Sunday at 4:25. That's the biggest rated game of the week. And either you get CBS with Nance and Romo, or you get Fox with Buck and Aikman doing it. And I think I think both teams are excellent, and I think both production crews are excellent. And I think that's what ESPN gets hurt with a little bit, is then they want to make Monday Night Football different and special, which it's not. And they're still, and they're getting the fourth best game of the week, basically. And then it turns into this train wreck. I've always said, and we're going in a totally different direction here, but since we were talking about the production of Fox, I've always said the issue with Monday Night Football right now, it's not just Tessitore and Booger. It's the entire production. That's my opinion. I'm curious what you think.
Well, Jay Rothman leaving, and is leaving. Right. I think we're at the alleged, but everybody knows it's happening stage of that. And I think it's time. You know, I think they just need a new look for that. I think one thing that's really interesting that's happened at ESPN generally, mostly at kind of the executive level, is college football at ESPN is taking over a little bit. You see people like, you know, you could look at Lee Fitting or Stephanie Drewley, they were really involved in college production, now beginning to get more power because there's this idea, I think, at ESPN that their college games look and sound better than their NFL games at the moment.
Right.
And I would love them to borrow some of that mojo. I'd also tell you this about Monday Night Football. You and I are old enough to remember this. Meaning that quality of game used to be on Sunday.
Right.
Back when it was on Turner and ESPN.
Right.
So you had kind of a more logical order. You had the big late afternoon game. Then you got some bonus football. And then you kind of had the game of the week on Monday. I feel right now it's out of order in a weird way.
Yeah.
We have big Sunday afternoon, then you have Sunday night football where everybody's kind of watching, and then you have this game that's quite after the fact. I think just mentally, it seems like it's kind of just hanging out there.
Right.
And I just sort of wonder if that's part of the problem, and, too. Not that that's going to change.
No, and you didn't even mention Thursday night, which is also now a better game than Monday night.
Yes.
So, I know. I mean, listen, I consider myself a diehard. I watch everything. And I know by Monday night, I find that game sometimes, I'm not going to say I would blow it off, but it's not going to get my interest like all the other games that week. I feel like now the week for me starts on a Thursday. And with Fox getting those games now, they've made those games pretty enticing. And then you have Sunday 4:25, Sunday night, and ESPN's left with scraps, basically. And then on top of that, they try to make it like, you know, it's this special game, and it's just not.
Yeah, it's mentally weird. And again, I'm as big a fanatic as you are to just have to get yourself up one more time.
Right.
And I feel if that game were on Sunday night, it'd be easier because you go, oh, well, hey, had a big day of football. I'm going to kick back and watch something. And then tomorrow night, we'll get up for another huge one. It's just funny the way it all lays out.
Yeah. Give me a little, since you were there in the press box in Miami, I'm curious a couple of things. When they do the post game, Terry Bradshaw for Fox is there giving out the trophy. What percentage of the stadium is still filled up at that point? Were you still in the press box for that?
That's a great question. I think a lot of 49er fans that were gone.
Right.
The Chiefs fans, you know, celebrating the first title in 50 years were hanging in there and were there very late. Sports writers are pretty much gone at that point, right? Because everybody's diving into an elevator and trying to get downstairs to do interviews.
Right.
So I guess I speak mostly for myself, but I think for most people that we're watching that on TV.
Right.
And you're sort of looking at a monitor and you really don't hear that speech and everybody's waiting for Andy Reid to get back to the interview rooms.
Right. And the halftime show, what is the sound quality inside the stadium? I mean, the lip syncing obviously, but is it clear from inside the stadium or Is it drowned out a little bit by noise? Everything seems so loud and big during that halftime show. I'm curious if you're in the building, what the sound
is
like.
Yeah, you can't. So one of the weird things about press boxes is one of the things I frankly do not like is that you cannot hear the stadium because they're sort of sealed up like a Ziploc container.
Right.
And so one is it sort of separates you from the crowd noise. But two, it really separates you from the halftime show. But on a bigger sort of cultural note, I watched that very sexually aggressive halftime show with a bunch of 50-something sports writers.
Yeah.
And mostly males, shall we say. And
yeah.
That's not an experience I'm ever going to forget. that was like watching that with my father-in-law or something. You know, it was very different. I'll put it that way.
I don't know. I have a lot to say about that halftime show, but probably not what I want to do on this podcast. But, I don't know. I'm not going to go there right now. It is funny to me, though. Like, did people just realize J-Lo is hot? Like, it's not like, you know, she came out Sunday. I mean, this is how she's always looked. She's always been this attractive. I was taken aback that people were so taken aback by how attractive she is. But
I didn't look at Twitter a ton because I was like, you know, I shouldn't be reading this while I'm actually at the game. But I saw like 3 tweets about the halftime show, and I was like, closed browser. Like, I can't.
Well, it became
this right now.
It became one of those Twitter things where you're not allowed to say anything bad about it. If you did, you would have gotten killed. Like, you had to say it
was.
You had to say it was good, and you
like, I can't do it.
Yeah. You had to say it was good, and you had to say you know, and this is, you know, I said this, where did I say that? Oh, I did a radio interview yesterday. That's what I said. I guess I should say it on my own podcast. You know, you're a great guy to talk to about this. You know, I feel like I'm a very opinionated person and I have takes on everything, but for me, the halftime show, I didn't dislike it and I didn't like it. It was sort of just there and I wanted it to end so we could get back to the football game, which felt like was, you know, the halftime felt like it was about 6 hours. But you're not allowed to feel this way. You have to either like it, you have to either love it or hate it. And then, you know, if the Twitter group think loves it, you can't go on there and say you don't like it or you want it to be over, because then, you know, your feed is destroyed. So it's the halftime show.
Yeah, it feels like you have to have, it's one of these things in American life where you have to have an opinion about it.
Right.
Right. None of us watch the same thing anymore. So when we do, like the Game of Thrones finale or the Super Bowl, and in this case, the halftime show, we have to have an opinion.
Right.
I'm totally okay with not having a take on the Super Bowl halftime show.
I didn't have
which
a take.
Me watching it on a monitor out of one eye, I went, okay, that was, all right, that was a halftime show.
Right.
Okay.
And also, like, I'm using halftime to, you know, get a drink, go to the bathroom, do that. I'm not like locked into if it's, here's my other thing. I don't know. I don't know if this is because I'm old or I don't know. I'm not into performing. No matter who, it could be my favorite artist. I'm not into the performances where you get 30 seconds of 5 songs. I'd rather hear like 2 songs in full. So like, I know you're not getting anything great there in terms of a performance. So I'm not like locked into it. And I didn't really see until after the fact that I guess people were so outraged by the outfits, and then her kid was on stage, J-Lo's kid, and they were in cages, and then people thought there were political messages involved, and I wasn't unaware of this until after the fact, because I'm just not locked into the halftime show because I don't care that much.
Yeah, I didn't notice them only when they're just absolutely terrible.
Yeah.
Which we've had a few.
Yeah.
But and you're sort of sitting there and you're looking at people at your Super Bowl party or in the press box going, this is really bad, right? But when they're anywhere from good to great, I think I just sort of tune out and go, okay, when does the football start again?
They also feel like they're all this. Like, if you go back and you watch, let's say, Justin Timberlake from a couple of years ago, and you watch Lady Gaga from a couple of years ago, they all feel the same. Like, there's a million dancers on the stage, and they show those fans in the pit or whatever it is, and there's all these dance moves, and it's 30 seconds, and you cut away, and there's another. I don't know. They don't seem that different anymore.
The fake fans in the pit are maybe my favorite thing about the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
That have to look happy and have to clap sort of at certain intervals. if sports writing doesn't work out, I want to be one of those people.
I think my favorite thing is they still bother making these poor people hold the microphone. It's just, it's not needed anymore.
That's some good art. Of all the artifice at the Super Bowl, that might be number one.
Yeah. Yeah, Fox ended up getting $99.9 million for the game, which last year was 98.7 in a very brutal game between the Patriots and Rams that had no action. I would assume Fox has to be thrilled at that number just from the standpoint of, in this day and age of cord cutting and people going to streaming, to be up even slightly is a victory. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I don't get too invested because I'm always like, what was Fox going to do? What control did Fox have over this number?
Right?
Fox didn't set the matchup. They made the telecast, but as you say, there's so many things they have to do, commercials you have to get in to pay the rent, elements you have to get in. So I always think, like, I know everybody sweats this out, and I know this has sort of a long-term effect on the negotiations we're about to have for the NFL rights, but I'm always like, what agency does the network actually have in this? You put on, you take the teams you got, you put on the football game, and then you wait and see how many people watch.
Right.
Not like anybody wasn't aware of the Super Bowl.
Well, it's all about
beyond the long term trends. It's kind of like, okay. We got 99 instead of 98. All
right. Right. It's all about drawing in the fan who doesn't care about. I mean, if you think about it, during the regular season, you have 20 million approximately who watch, you know, the big games every week. You get into the playoffs, you get to the 30 millions. And then on that Super Bowl Sunday, it's 100 million. So you have 70 million people who don't really give a crap about football. And that's who Fox is going to cater to.
Right. Yeah, it feels like if us is the people to tune in every week, this feels like it's less for us. Than your normal Sunday telecast.
It's not even remotely for us. It's fascinating to me that 70 million people who don't watch football during the season watch the Super Bowl. I don't get it.
But. Right, because it seems like everybody's. Well, if you look at those charts, it seems like everybody's watching football during the season, or at least what counts for everybody in this much downsized television world.
Before we get into Radio Row, couple of things I noticed on your Twitter feed. You made me laugh when, the country was freaking out over the Tom Brady Instagram post where you didn't know if he was coming or going. And then, of course, it turned out to be a Super Bowl ad. And then, of course, people on Twitter were all pissed off about that. And you had a tweet basically saying, there's no better way to show how frustrated you are with this company that made this Tom Brady commercial by tweeting out the name of the company and mentioning them on Twitter.
I just saw so many people tweeting, I'm so angry, because what I thought was like a Brady retirement or leaving the Pats or whatever turned out to be an ad for fill in the blank.
Right.
And then I just kept tweeting that. I said, you're doing the work of fill in the blank right now.
Right.
By doing this. So it's okay to just say like, yeah, that's done, and leave it at that.
Well, I felt like it. I sort of have this. I have this ongoing conversation with my good friend Richard Deitch about, how much do you feed the trolls, which I never do and he seems to do. But, I could sit there and make fun of FS1 daytime talk shows all day long on Twitter if I wanted to. But I feel like that's exactly what they would want, so I don't do it. I feel like this is a similar thing, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. They want attention. Yeah. That Brady tweet was tweeted on that day at that time with the express purpose of luring us all in, and guess what? It worked, and they got what they wanted.
Yep. Well, while you were in Miami for the Super Bowl week, did you get any intel or any? Did you hear anything? Rumors about what is going to happen with the hottest free agent in all of sports, Tony Romo?
Well, I think I came out of Miami with the same sense that I went in, which is that it's still hard to believe that CBS is going to let him go.
Right.
And it just makes, it just feels like CBS has, and by the way, we could say this for the CBS Sunday afternoon NFL games too. CBS has such an incentive to keep him. And when you do something that right, even if it costs you a ton of money, the downside here is, I know we're all talking about $10 million, $14 million, all this stuff. If you give Tony Romo that kind of money, everybody is getting a raise.
Right.
Everybody at your own network is getting a raise, and everybody at every other network is getting a raise. Right?
Right, absolutely.
So, I always thought that with ESPN, when people are talking about, ESPN can get him and solve their Monday night problems and all that stuff, maybe use Tony as a way to get into some Sunday telecasts when the new deals get. But I'm always like, why isn't Kirk Herbstreit just going to come ask for a raise right after that? Why isn't Stephen A. going to be like, hey, that contract I just signed? I signed that premise on the fact that I was going to be the highest paid person here, and now this guy's making way more than me. I want to talk. It's just going to be a nightmare from that perspective. But again,
that's a good point.
The networks make a lot of money, so why am I worried about that?
But it's a fascinating issue from this standpoint. If ESPN came out with some, someone down in Miami who's in the business had told me that ESPN's going to offer him 7 years, $100 million, which I find hard to believe. But let's say hypothetically they did that. And CBS lets him go and take that deal. CBS is not losing one rating point or one viewer if, by plugging in whoever they got to plug in with Jim Nance. Now, the flip side of that is, I think it's more of a, you know, optics thing, but money is more important than optics, and I don't think CBS is going to, you know, go completely crazy if ESPN does. So, and if ESPN, listen, if that's, and if ESPN is going to offer them that money, what they're going to expect is they're going to expect Romo to do, you know, get up 3 days a week and appear on, you know, all their football, Sports Center. I don't see Tony doing that. That's my, I just don't think that's what he wants to be doing with his time, especially when you hear he doesn't even want to do the games because he wants to play golf. So,
yes, I don't know him, but I get the sense that he likes this kind of life he has now.
Right.
Where he works 18, 20 weeks a year, plays a ton of golf, tries to qualify for PGA events, and goes home. And if he could get that kind of deal to maintain that lifestyle, I think he'd be real happy with that.
And until that new you mentioned it earlier, that, you know, the NFL is about to do new contracts with its television partners. Until that deal is done, I mean, if you're just going by what we got now, you know, ESPN gets one playoff game, and it's always that, you know, Saturday 4:30 shit fest, and that's it for Tony, and no Super Bowl. I mean, at CBS, he's doing, you know, three playoff games and a Super Bowl every 3 years.
Yeah, I would just think it would have to come with a promise that Disney is going all in to get in on Sunday.
Right.
You know, that's part of the lure with them, and that you're going to be the face of Monday for a couple of years, but really you're going to be the face of Sunday for us. And you're going to be the guy who helps us get in on Sunday. The only thing I insist on this, by the way, is that when people say highest paid broadcaster ever, we do have to adjust for inflation here.
Yeah, this is your
we
big
cannot
thing here.
Be like those, yeah, those dumb movie people. You've seen me ranting about this,
yeah,
right?
John Madden. Yep.
John Madden made $8 million in 1993, 1994.
Right.
That's $14 million today.
Right.
So it's not, eight is not the number, folks. If we care about this, and Jimmy, I'm not sure we should, but if we care about this, right. I don't see AA cares, but I don't know if I care. But if I do care, I want it to be 14. I really want the number to be correct.
That's your fight. That's your fight. And I, you know. I
okay.
I
we all got to have one.
Yeah. So. I don't blame you. Let's go to this. You wrote this great article for The Ringer. It was titled, Welcome to Radio Row, Site of the Super Bowl's Cutthroat Celebrity Hierarchy. And I have a lot of strong feelings about Radio Row, so I ate this article up that you wrote for The Ringer. It blows my mind that radio stations participate in Radio Row. And basically, if you didn't read it, Brian's article talked about sort of how, you know, every radio station in sports talk radio station in America practically goes down to the Super Bowl they set up shop in this one big convention center, and then all these athletes are shuttled in and they go on every show one after another. I think I'm pretty sure by my calculations, Christian McCaffrey was on every radio and television show in America last week, and of course didn't say one.
You are correct.
Didn't say one memorable thing. Yeah. It blows my mind. And so, I hate getting a guy on a podcast and be like, well, explain for the listeners. But if you just give me, explain the, what a Wednesday guy is, a Friday guy, and a Monday guy, because I think it's brilliant.
So this was the most fascinating thing to me, was that Radio Row stretches from Monday through Friday, the week before the Super Bowl. The guests get bigger as the course of the week goes. So, like, a Monday guy is the backup long snapper for the Bills team that lost a couple of Super Bowls. That's a Monday guy. By the time you get to Thursday, that's like Russell Wilson. So everybody has their slot. And these PR agents who are, by the way, running these guys through, because this is what this is about, right? It is about plugging a product,
right,
that the athlete in almost every case has been paid to plug. They put all this thought into, is my client a Monday guy? Is he a Tuesday guy? Because they want to bring him out as late in the week as they can, but still have him get the most interviews, right? So if I brought that Bills long snap right on Thursday, nobody would care about that guy.
Right.
Nobody would talk to him. But if I bring him out on Monday, he can talk to like 30 people, because the radio hosts are sitting there. They've paid like, what, 20 grand to bring the station to Miami?
Right.
They're bored, and they're just throwing people on the air.
So do you know,
yeah, so it's all about, are you a Monday guy? And right now, by the way, talking to you, I'm a Tuesday guy. I see.
I saw that. Yeah, congrats.
That's a tough look for me. I really got to say.
Listen, you're not a Monday guy, so take it and be happy with it.
for a writer, it's probably a compliment, honestly.
I did a radio interview in Australia on Saturday, the night before the Super Bowl, and I felt like that was a good slot. My ego was built up pretty good that night.
Yeah, and it was probably Sunday in Australia, right? So you were officially a Sunday guy.
I felt good about that. Do you know, like, a quote-unquote Friday guy, let's say it's a Russell Wilson, goes down to Radio Row on a Friday and he's promoting, let's say, a big product, you know, Pepsi, whatever. Do you know what he makes from that, approximately?
I heard, so I don't think a guy of Russell's stature gets up to do that for less than six figures.
Right. Okay. Makes sense.
I think you're meeting. I heard somebody, a former NFL coach, famous NFL coach, I won't name him, got around $100,000 to do like five or six interviews.
Wow.
On a Thursday, Friday.
Wow.
Yep.
But the kicker on this is the interviews are terrible. They're awful. They're not good. No. That's the kicker. I'll give you a line from your column that really made me laugh just because of, I thought you had one sentence in that column that just summed it up perfectly. You were talking about a player, I don't remember who it was, trying to get on some radio shows, and he thinks he's getting on a show, and then the producer says he can't get on, and the producer says, shit, we've got Vinny Testaverde. That right there sums up Radio Row right there. Like, you can't get on because Vinny Testaverde is there, who no one in America cares about, except I'm sure his family, and is pitching something God knows what. And this is like the battle that's going on at Radio Row.
Totally. And Vinny, by the way, I think was like a Monday, Tuesday guy, but because it was in Miami and he was a Hurricane way back when, I think he got elevated to Wednesday guy.
Yeah.
I'm not totally sure how that happened.
Right.
I totally agree with you. You and I love sports radio. We genuinely, or let's say love and our fast, love, hate, are fascinated by sports radio.
Right.
Right? Fair assessment.
Yes. Especially.
You know why I love sports radio? Because I love the hosts talking to each other.
Bingo.
That's what I like.
Right.
I don't like rando athletes getting on there and being really boring. Like, once in a while, the hosts come in with, like, such a good angle. Or if you have somebody like Dan Patrick who's just so good at it and can pull things out of these guys and sort of come in. But if it's my, you know, normal guys from Dallas, I'd much rather them hear them just talk to each other.
Right. Yeah, I agree. And
that's what I love.
I don't mind the interview if you've got someone different who's not doing 100. If someone's doing 100, if you have Christian McCaffrey and he was on, I mean, I saw him on Good Morning Football, and I think within a minute he was on with Pro Football Talk, and then 30 seconds later he's on with WFAN bang, bang, bang. That is, if you got someone who's only doing one or two interviews that week, then I could see, you know, where it's worth it. But to just go through the ESPN has the car wash. This is car wash on steroids, obviously.
This is like the auto dealership.
Yeah, there was another quote in your story from another radio producer. They were getting Dan Marino on the show, and he's like, "We're not going to say no to Dan Marino when you know the Super Bowl's in Miami." And I read that quote, and the first thing in my head was like, "Why not? Why? You're not going to say no to Dan Marino? What has Dan Marino ever said anything memorable in any interview that's ever, you know, sent shockwaves through America?" Cracked me
and
up.
It's the same host, I think, that would watch Dan Marino on the CBS pregame show and go, "That guy never says anything."
Right,
but
exactly.
Then when he blesses their show,
and
look, part of this, right? Part of the reason these stations go to Radio Row is because it makes you feel big time,
right?
You know, you can, especially if you have competition in your city. You know, we're all going to the Super Bowl, and then you're there, and then I think there becomes this incentive that you want to justify your place there, right? Well, what are we doing here? Because we're not talking about the game, right? We can talk about the game at home. So what are we doing? Ah, there's Emmitt Smith. Oh, there's Kirk Cousins. There's Jerry Rice. Let's get them on. And that's what happened.
There's also your article there hit home a little bit for me too, because there was another radio producer who talked about, you know, his show was so excited once to get Gronk on, because, you know, you're talking about one of the best players in the game, goofball personality, and then Gronk was terrible on his show. And I taped a full SI Media podcast one time with Gronk, and then we didn't even run it because it was so bad. So I he basically, any question I answered, he sort of managed to plug Tide in the answer. So we just didn't run it. Yeah.
And that's what some of these guys do, by the way. The term quid pro quo was used to me on Radio Row, which is hilarious given what's going on in Washington right now.
Right.
I said the piece quid pro quo in Washington is an impeachable offense on Radio Row. It's just how people talk. But this actually happens, and some of these athletes come on to plug something, and they don't understand the quid.
Right.
Right? So they don't understand. You have to give an interview about sports or yourself or whatever, and then you get to plug the product. That's the trade that these guys make. And then sometimes they come on, they just want to plug the product and go home. It's like, no.
Right.
That's not how this works.
Right. Well, my favorite is, you know, obviously if I'm doing a podcast, it's different than a radio. Radio shows, they'll do a 5 or 6 minute spot. Podcast, I like to get someone on for, you know, a minimum of 20 minutes. And, you know, sometimes you get these pitches. You know, we have athlete X plugging product Y. We could give you 5 minutes with him. And, you know, we need you to plug the product and our new commercial. Okay, so that leaves me how much time for the actual interview? A minute? Thanks, appreciate it. How many days did you spend on Radio Row this year in Miami to do your reporting on this?
I spent like 4.5.
Was there anyone?
Jimmy, I was ready to run.
And you only did one interview on Radio Row?
Like me actually interviewing athletes?
No. You getting interviewed by a radio station.
Oh, yeah. Nice. I did Dallas, and I also did Australia, too. We may have been on the
same
station.
All right. Now,
who? Nobody knew who I was. I was barely a Monday guy, so nobody wanted me.
What did you see anybody on Radio Row who you thought, okay, well, that could be a good interview for a radio station?
Yeah, it was usually non-sports people.
Yeah.
Like Martha Stewart was there on Thursday.
I saw that.
Maybe because I haven't heard Martha Stewart's cliches in the same way I have, like, some random quarterbacks.
Right.
Maybe that's more intriguing to me. I'd say the kind of the coolest one was we were finishing up on Friday. I think I was doing a podcast, my own podcast. And I packed up and I turned around and there's this guy in a Chiefs jersey. And it turned out to be Edward James Olmos.
Okay.
And I went, what? And I'm still not sure why he was there. But I was like, that's really cool.
Yeah,
that's kind of awesome. I didn't know he. I don't know if he's a Friday guy, but at least it's somebody who I'd want to talk to.
I'm trying to think if he'd be. He'd have to be a Friday guy. Friday is when you usually get you get more non-athletes there on the Friday, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. Yeah, Katie Kirk was on Radio Row.
Katie, what was she playing?
You know, I guess I'm mildly interested.
Yeah,
she was in a Super Bowl ad, right?
Oh, okay.
I kind of caught it out of the corner of my eye. Yeah. That's the other thing is everybody's plugging something that's already going to be an ad.
Right.
So it's sort of redundant. Like, we're going to see you during the Super Bowl anyway. We don't really need the extra here we go.
I can't complain about that because I interviewed John Cena last week because he was in a Super Bowl ad. So they gave me 20 minutes.
That's somebody
they,
I want to talk to.
Right. They gave me 20 minutes with him, and he said some pretty crazy stuff, so it worked out well.
I saw the Big Show on Radio Row. That, he was a Wednesday guy, by the way, and I think that might be a little bidding a little low for the Big Show. But he was there for Special Olympics.
Okay.
I want to talk to the Big Show for sure. That's cool.
Yeah, the Big Show should be a Thursday guy for sure. That's a Thursday guy.
Yeah. At least.
You know, it's funny. When I think of Radio Row being a New Yorker my whole life, I always think of Mike and the Mad Dog because they've always claimed that they've invented Radio Row. And it got to the point where on the Monday of the start of the Super Bowl week, when they would do their show from there, they always start the show with a 20-minute lecture about how they invented Radio Row, which I love that kind of batshit craziness. And but now neither one. I know Dog was there, but now Mike is not there, so it's a little melancholy.
Yeah, and I tell you, one of the kind of low-key stories of Radio Row, and I didn't actually put this in the piece, I don't think, was a lot of radio stations weren't there, which kind of says something about the industry. I don't think Michael Kay's show was there. Boomer Geo were there from the Fan, but there were just a lot of stations. It felt downsized.
Okay.
And whether that's, stations not having as much money as they once did, whether that's, making a decision like, hey, do we really need to spend 10 grand to send you guys there? Or do we just send the morning hosts and not the evening hosts? That's kind of a fascinating story in itself.
I should know this. I don't know if I don't want to put you on. Do you know where the Super Bowl is next year?
Tampa.
Tampa. Okay. Because I'm wondering, I would assume more state, shows might go to their station and fight a little more to go to a, do their show from Radio Row when the Super Bowl's in Miami than, say, Minnesota. So it's interesting that it would be less this year when it's in Miami. I figured everyone would want to be in Miami.
Yeah, there was a lot of, sports writer complaining is like my favorite and least favorite thing at the same time. There were a lot of complaints about Miami and logistics and all that stuff, which I just dismiss out of hand. I actually heard some romance for the Indianapolis Super Bowl.
Interesting.
And I was like, well, let's just put on the brakes here. I wasn't at that one, but yeah. This is Miami, people. We really, I know you have to drive across a causeway to do anything or to get to your hotel, whatever it's booked. This seems fine. Let's not go back to Indy just yet.
I did hear from some people that a big problem with Miami the past week, though, was I guess there was a lot of rain at points that made some things difficult in terms of getting around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, I'm cool. I'm happy. Florida's a happy place to do this.
Do you want to return to Radio Row next year and see if you could do a show on a Wednesday in Tampa?
Yeah, that would be my only reason to go back at this point, to Radio Row in particular, is just to try to advance my station in life. And, see, like I said, for a writer, we were thinking, like, what writer could possibly be a Thursday guy?
I think your boss would be a Thursday, Friday guy.
Okay,
for sure.
he's a Friday guy.
Yeah, for sure.
But, like, we were like, was Michael Lewis a Friday guy? Malcolm Gladwell a Friday guy?
I don't know.
Do those guys play on sports radio stations in the same way they play on, the Oprah Book Club? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. And the thing about a Peter King is that Peter King does 5 billion interviews, so I don't even know. I mean, is it that special to get him on a Friday? I mean,
Peter's around. Yeah,
Yeah. Whereas your boss, you get your boss on a Friday, and, he's not doing a million interviews, and then it becomes something, I think, a little bit, more special. Talk about Bill Simmons, if anyone. I think he's a legit writer. Friday guy. I'm trying to think if that's a hard one. That is a hard one. It was funny because you had a line in there too about Rob Riggle, and I had a conversation with some coworkers. I think maybe at the start of the week, and I said something about I wanted to tweet something, and I ran it by someone, and I said, "Is this going to be too mean?" I think it's too mean, and if it's mean, I don't want to put it on Twitter. I'll say it on the podcast, but I wanted to tweet, If you are, just so you know, if you're a radio station in America, you do not have to put Rob Riggle on your show this week. I don't think anyone would have listened to that message.
No one took your advice.
Yeah.
If you tweeted that or not, no one took your advice. I was sitting there, when we had a little ringer table, and behind me, I just heard someone say, "Rob Riggle brought it on the show today." Like, oh, wow.
Because we never see him anywhere when it comes to sports. Never.
No, we don't. He's a tough get, let me tell you.
Let me also, guess what? Eric Stone Street, not a great get.
I feel I saw the famous Chiefs fans all week. They were in the Christian McCaffrey zone.
Rudd,
I'm all good.
Paul Rudd, not a great get,
The Champ Kind guy, whose name escapes me at this moment, he's also kind of a Radio Row regular.
Who's that?
I did not see him this year, but the guy who plays Champ Kind and Anchorman, the sportscaster with a big cowboy hat.
That guy.
Like, he's on Radio Row all the time. I think he may be a permanent resident of Radio Row.
I'll give you another one. David Koechner. Yes. He was great on The Office. I'll give you another one. He probably wasn't at Radio Row, but another actor who gets pitched and is on every show in America, Hank Azaria. Not a great get anymore. He's on every show. We got it.
Yeah, especially the Brockmire thing.
Yeah.
We got you, Hank. We got that. Yeah, we can just call it a day.
Yeah, we got it. Rob Riggle, I'm telling you, if you're booking him, you're not doing anything special, just so you know. That's so mean. I was going to tweet this, and I said I'm going to.
Glad you didn't tweet all this mean stuff and just said it now.
Rather just say it here. Before I let you go, I'm just curious because this happens with me, and I'm just wondering. I was looking through your Twitter feed, and you were basically live tweeting we're taping this Wednesday late afternoon. No, excuse me, Tuesday late afternoon. I don't even know what day it is. It's Tuesday. Tuesday.
I almost became a Wednesday guy.
And you were tweeting Tuesday night about the debacle with the Iowa caucuses, and I'm just curious because I sort of get these. I sort of have days when I come into the SportsIllustrated.com office. And There's nothing in sports I want to discuss, and something outside of sports happens, and that's what I want to discuss, and I can't. It gets me like frustrated. Obviously, at the Ringer, you probably have a lot of leeway, which is great. But when you get something like that on a Monday night with the caucus being this debacle, and is it a situation where you're like, I don't care about sports right now. I want to talk about this, and I don't really care if it bothers people, or do you try to monitor and sort of limit yourself on what you go into non-sports?
No, I think it's just whatever the topic du jour is what I want to talk about.
Right.
And, you know, we do this podcast, The Press Box, so it's kind of, we can kind of make it our job that day.
Yep.
To talk about the Iowa caucuses. And by the way, you and I are both, critics of reporters on television. And we like to complain about sports TV a lot of the time, which is totally justified.
Yep.
Every time I feel that way and then I see cable news, I'm like, oh my gosh. I'm like, this is just as bad as sports TV without the production value.
I think it's worse.
You know?
Yeah, it's worse.
I mean, watching Wolf Blitzer try to fill 4 hours last night. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
While they were waiting for the results, like that wouldn't have worked on ESPN.
Right. Right.
That wasn't good. That isn't going to fly, right? Or just David Axelrod sitting around telling war stories. Can you imagine if there was just an ex-coach on ESPN just talking for hours about old games? That's not going to happen.
No.
It was not good. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
Not good.
I envy you with the Press Box pod, because I know you guys get into all sorts of non-sports topics, and I see that, and I'm like, yeah, that's what... even like a day like today, when, I was trying to find something to write this morning, and I came across the video. I don't know if you've seen it yet, but it's going... You'll see it at some point of... I saw a woman at the caucus Monday night put in a vote for Mayor Pete, finds out after the fact that he's married to a man, and then she wants her vote back. Like, to me, there is nothing in sports that can compare to that. Like, that's what I want to talk about and write about all day today. Like, I don't care about any... I couldn't care less about the Super Bowl rating right now. Like, when I see that, and, it just... It rattles my brain, because I just want to write and talk about it so much. So I envy you with that
perspective. And I know... Yeah, and I know politics just makes people mad a lot of the time, and I know it's divisive, but I just feel beyond... who we're all voting for,
right?
That there is just this mass of us that are just watching the same stuff, right? We watch the Super Bowl,
right?
And now we're watching this.
Well,
and guess what? We're going to probably watch the State of the Union tonight, at least sample it, and then we're going to watch the Oscars on Sunday.
Right.
So it is all kind of one thing, right? It's all the media.
Yes.
Writ large. And I just feel that that's, there are a bunch of us that applies to.
Yeah. The biggest issue is that what you and I think like to do, and when it comes to the politics, like you just mentioned the cable news, like we like to make observations about what we see on cable news. But unfortunately, any observation you make becomes a political thing, even though there's no politics involved in it. So, if you point out a funny moment from an interview that's gone wrong, if you do it, on this side of the aisle, then they say it's because you're trying to make that side look bad. But, even the Trump tweet after the Super Bowl is a perfect example. Even if you're a MAGA person, the guy had the wrong state in his tweet. You have to be able to
be funny to everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
I really think so. And by the way, from the other side, I was watching CNN last night, and Van Jones is just reading Twitter, because that's what we were kind of down to, just reading tweets, and he found one from a guy, and I believe the tweet did turn out to be real, but he read it on the air. This is from one of these Iowa precinct guys.
Right.
And he said, "I have no idea if it's true." They read it on TV, and I have no idea if it's true.
Right.
Bernard Shaw's head just exploded.
That's
don't know, We're going to do our best. I love that.
That sums up the media world today. Yeah. But even the – have you seen that clip yet of the woman in Iowa who wants to change her vote when she finds out?
I haven't. That is incredible.
Yeah, so I retweeted it, and I said, this is why the dumbest statement that people say is, it doesn't matter who you vote for as long as you vote. No, it does matter, because people like this should not be allowed. And that's at a Democratic caucus. So, there's absurdities on both sides of the aisles when you're covering what you see on TV. And that's really, but I guess the problem is people know that I think Trump is a buffoon. So, of course, yes, I do have these built-in biases, but...
Yeah, or how about, did you see the moment last night where I believe it was that same Iowa precinct guy, he was on CNN, and he'd been waiting on hold with the Iowa Democratic Party, and you could hear the hold music in the background?
Yes.
Like Blitzer's trying to interview him, and you can hear the hold music, which is hilarious on live television. And then he gets hung up on because he's talking to Wolf Blitzer instead of, he'd been waiting an hour on hold with the Iowa Democratic Party.
Unreal.
What a moment.
Wolf in those moments is pretty spectacular from a train wreck standpoint.
Yeah, and Wolf's like, well, we'll touch base with you later tonight. I'm thinking to myself, the guy's going, no, please don't, actually, because you just messed up my whole night, and now I have to call the party back and be on hold for another hour.
Listen, I'm not going to lie. I still when they're doing stuff like that at a live event and they go to the phone, I do get like a little tingle of excitement hoping I'm going to get a Baba Booey or Howard Stern's penis at some point. I still hold out for those.
Here, let's go to the Iowa precinct, Captain, and it's, you know. And there's the gag.
Yeah.
Yep, always a chance.
Always. Oh, I still hope for those moments. All right. Well, I appreciate you coming on here. And like I said, the article is Welcome to Radio Row, site of the Super Bowl's cutthroat celebrity hierarchy. It's very amusing. And they did a great job with it. So well done on that. And thanks for doing the pod today.
As always, Jimmy, thanks for having me on.
Anytime. Take care. All right, my thanks to Brian Curtis of The Ringer for coming on this episode of the SI Media Podcast. If you missed it last week, Kevin Harlan, who called Super Bowl 54 for radio, was on the show. Brett Musburger and Chris Long 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, Kurt Menefee from Fox. So if you missed any of those, go into the archives and check them out. And also please subscribe to the SI Media Podcast. That wraps up this edition. We'll see you next week. Take care.